So let's turn to the page. We did not get too far yesterday. Page
288,
correct. Okay, so yesterday we concluded with the Likutei Shas. Now we're up to new psukim. Pasuk Gimel, let's do a few psukim together. Hayelchu shnayim yachtav mibli im noyadu. Can two people walk together without them first having, noyadu means having come together in the past? Meaning, there's no such thing, it seems to be saying in this pasuk, there's no such thing as a coincidence. There's no such thing as a coincidence that just two people happen to go in the same location, to come to the same place. It must have been that in advance, they have met, planned, conspired. Working? Okay. Volume? Okay, yeah, it is. Okay. All right, good, okay. Can two people, now better now?
Yes. Okay.
Can two people come together, Miblino Adu, if they have not yet met and decided to, they have not, before they travel together, they have met and agreed and planned to travel together. We'll see more detail. Pasuk Yud Dalet, Hayishag Aryeh Bayar, does a lion roar in the forest? V'teref ein loy, when there is no food. Chazal said that the only time a lion roars is when he gets excited. What does a lion get excited about? Food, about prey. Hayitein kefir koy loy, mim oy no so. A kefir is a baby lion. We mentioned many times that there are seven stages in the development of a lion. And each stage in its development has its own unique term. Does a kfir, a baby lion, raise up his voice, mime oino soy, from his ma'on? Ma'on means from his habitat, from his dwelling place, his what's it called?
Lair.
Okay. Bilti imlochad, unless he is trapped. The Pasuk is telling us over here is that there are certain moments, defining moments in the life of a creature that causes them to give forth a unique sound. Very profound what the Pasuk is telling us. Pasuk, we'll see a lot more soon. Pasuk, hey, hasipol tzipor al pach aretz umoikesh ein la. Now we're not discussing over here a sound. We're describing over here, does a bird fall upon a trap unless a mokesh, a trap has been set for it. There's a bait. Mokesh hilari really means the bait. So when the bird falls for the bait, it triggers the trap and it is captured. The bird falls in the trap only when it stumbles over the bait that has been set for it. Hayal pach min ha'adama, does a trap ascend from the earth, v'lochoy lo yilkoid, and v'lochoy means the victim, is not captured. The only time it happens that a trap is activated, it goes into motion, the mechanism is activated to cause it to trap whatever is there, as if there's something to trap. It's foolproof. There are no false alarms, it seems, this pasuk is telling us when it comes to trapping animals. Okay, we'll see a little bit more in a few moments. And this is really what it's all building up to. All of these psukim, all these different examples are building up to the pasuk vav. These are all mishalim. Many, many mishalim, which we have to discuss and analyze, all leading up to this. The mitaka shofar be'ir, the om lo yecheradu. Does it ever happen that a shofar, a horn is blown in the city and the people of the city do not tremble? If the shofar is sound, that means there's war. It's a warning sign of war. Imtia rabi'ir. It really leads up to this. Does it ever happen such a thing that there is an rod, that there is some evil harm that comes to a city? Vashem loy osa. It's a very powerful pasuk, the very end, that nothing in this world is a coincidence. If Rachmana Litzlan, we see a raw in this world, like we just saw everyone in the news, everyone is finally beginning to dwell in, it's beginning to seep in what happened in Pittsburgh and the consequence ramifications. It's not a coincidence. It's not, what do you expect? There are crazy people out there, people have weapons, and violence happens. This is not correct. This is not a Torah Hashkafa. For Rachmana Litzlan, there is a Ra'ah Be'ir, there is a tragedy. Whatever the tragedy is, There's a reason for it. Nothing in this world is a coincidence. Hashem lo yasa. Is it not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into motion that this should happen? Hashem didn't just allow that. The pasuk is very precise. It doesn't just say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, he hides himself and he lets the world take on, become a place of chaos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actively involved in every single thing that happens.
What about Hester Ponim?
So Hester Ponim, it's a very good question, because we get the impression is that the world is a world of chaos. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu just distances himself, Mimela, all of these horrible things are going to happen. And Hashem doesn't have to do horrible things. Hashem just has to remove himself from protecting us, and Mimela, horrible things will happen. That's a very common understanding of Hester Ponim, and there's no question that's true. But there's another element, there's another dimension of Hester Ponim, which is also true. How do we balance the two together? I don't know, but there are two different elements. Hashem, even in his Hester Ponim, is very much involved in every single thing that happens. It's not just that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes himself and the world takes on a state of natural chaos. That's how we may perceive it. But in the Hester Ponim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also calling the shots, is directing every action that results in pain for us. Maybe that's what it means. V'anochi Haster Astir Ponai. What is the double expression of a doubleness of Hester Ponim? There are two levels. V'anochi Haster Astir Ponai. The commentators are very... Let the pastor say, V'anochi Astir Ponai Bayamahu. So the answer is, there are two different types of Hester Ponim. Sometimes, you know, we go through life, nothing is terrible, everything is okay, you know, we survive, we get by, but we just don't feel Hashem is there. We don't have a positive. We don't necessarily feel that Hashem is shooting arrows at us, and Hashem is bringing upon us suffering, but we're not going anywhere. We're not advancing, we're not proceeding, we're not accomplishing. Why not? Hashem says, you know what, I don't want to have anything to do with you. You're not behaving, you're not doing mitzvahs, you're not good people. So Hashem distances himself from us, and we get a sense, where are you, Hashem? There is Hester upon him. Then there are situations where it's worse than that. It's not that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not helping us, we're not advancing, we're not progressing, we're not moving forward. We feel that we're being tortured. We feel that someone is harming us. Hashem is squeezing us. We're in pain. Things are bad things are happening to us, and we are losing. So what's going on? You could argue, oh, so Hashem is here. Hashem is here. Hashem is punishing us. But that's not Hester Ponim, because Hester Ponim is where Hashem disappears. So the answer is we get almost a double sensation sometimes that Hashem we're being punished, but we don't even merit to feel that Hashem is the one that is punishing us. It feels as if Hashem disappeared, and there's another force of nature or a natural force that is bringing upon us harm. So it's very unsettling. There would at least be a silver lining in Hester Ponim if we would feel that it's you, Hashem, who is hitting us. It's not good, obviously. It's very painful. It's very, very harsh. But at least Hashem is here. We can sense that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with us. But when we and then again, there are times when nothing is harmful. We don't feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing us harm, but we don't sense Hashem's presence among us. So that's another different type of Hester Ponim. The worst of the worst is we have both of these two things together, where you do not sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here. And it's not parif, person is suffering, and you don't get a sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is bringing this suffering upon us human beings. That is a double dosage of Hester Ponim. V'yonochi Haster Astir Ponai Bayoim Hahu. That's the most difficult type of Hester Ponim. You can have one without the other. Again, you can have a Hester Ponim where everything is good, but where is Hashem? And then you can have a Hester Ponim where Hashem is, we're being punished, but we can sense that it is Hashem who is punishing us. Sometimes people, they feel it. People feel something happens to them, and they clearly see the Midah, Keneged Midah, the Yad Hashem, I deserve this. I did the same thing to someone else. I'm guilty. I didn't do tshuva. I see what Hashem is doing. Okay, it's painful, but there's a silver lining. Hashem is here. The worst of the worst is when there's suffering and you don't even see Hashem is with you. That is the Anochi Haster Aster Panai. So here it says that this pasuk says if in Tia Rabbi Ir, if there's Rabbi Ir, which obviously means Hashem is not here, He's not helping us, and Hashem is bringing upon us evil, Hashem Loi Asa. Are you going to say that it's nothing more than a coincidence? Things happen. There are things that happen in this world that are evil. It's force of nature, force of evil. No such thing. And to emphasize that point, we've given over here, I think, 5 mashalim. And each mashal builds upon the previous mashal. We have to analyze this in much more detail. The first mashal is, if 2 people travel together, you can be certain they made plans to be together. If you're sitting on a plane, you see 2 people say, but generally, if you see 2 friends talking to each other on a trip, they're going somewhere on an airplane, obviously they plan together, we're going to travel to this location and we're going to book seats next to each other. That's the way it goes. If a lion is giving out a roar, it means only one thing, it found food. If a young lion is giving forth its voice, it means only one thing, it means it is in trouble. If a bird collapses into a net, it means it took the bait. If a net that's meant to catch animals, it springs into action, the mechanism is triggered, it means one thing only, the animal took the bait. It means it's going to trap something. It's foolproof. If it's swinging into action, it means there's something there to catch. If they're blowing in the city a shofar, it means there is trouble. And therefore, just like you can relate to every single one of these mashalim, and obviously each one of these mashalim is presenting a different dimension of cause and effect. The world is a complicated place. There are many different types of causes and effects. There are human actions. There are animal things that happen. Nature, it's part of the teva of this world. There are things which were operated in the rules of physics. All different types of dimensions of causes and effects that are presented from Pasuk Gimel until we get to the second half of the Pasuk. These are all mashalim to teach you that punishment and reward are also part of this concept called cause and effect. Im tiye ra'a bi'ir, v'Hashem lo'y asa. Did Hashem not do this? Hashem is speaking to us. Okay, everything that you read on the news is almost always bad news. That's you. Every now in Pittsburgh, every day you open up a newspaper or you read online what is going on in the world. 90% is bad news. Why did this happen? The answer is the Hashem Layasa. Hashem brought this about. Why? Hashem is speaking to us. If we choose to ignore this, then we're just gonna sink deeper and deeper into the problem. Pasuk Zayin, Ki lo yaaseh Hashem Elokim davar, Hashem does not do anything, Ki im golos soidoi, unless He first reveals His secret, El avadav hanaviyim. Now this is a new idea, which we have to tie into the previous psukim. Everything that Hashem does before He proceeds and implements His plans, He reveals it to His pious ones. Pasuk Ches, we repeat this pasuk, this idea. Arye Sha'og Milo Yira. It's not really different, but it's a different idea. If the lion roars, Milo Yira, is it not natural that a person shall be afraid, shall be overcome with fear? Hashem Elokim Diber, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks, Milo Yinave, the person who is a prophet has no choice but to give forth his nevuah. This pasuk ches, which we have to go through before we get to get here. Gesundheit, we have to first understand what's the connection between pasuk ches and all of these other psukim, and it's also teaching us a principle in the prophecy that a prophet generally does not have a choice. It's just like a woman who's pregnant; it's going to happen. The baby is going to come out one way or another. A person who has been given a message to deliver to this world, there is nothing the Navi can do to withhold that message. that message will have to make its way out to the world, equivalent to a woman who's pregnant, the baby's going to come out, whether you like it or not. So too, and we're comparing this principle to a lion. When a lion gives forth its a roar, it's natural that human beings that hear the sound are overcome with fear. Just like that's a natural outgrowth of the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers, a Navi, natural outgrowth of the message delivered to a Navi is that he has to give it over to the people. Let's take a look here at all these sukkim, one thing at a time. Let's run to the mitzvahs. We'll just do maybe a few sukkim at a time. And the mitzvahs start with Pasuk Gimel, back on page 289. Hayelchu. It does not happen that two people travel a long distance if they did not together initially plan to go together. It just doesn't happen. It's not a coincidence when you see two people traveling together. Now, I know you're going to ask me, it's not true. Go on an airplane. Everyone who's sitting next to each other, probably 99% of the time, it's just a coincidence that the two people are sitting together. Well, obviously, we're not discussing modern-day travel. We're discussing ancient times when people traveled in the desert and on very dangerous roads, and it's sakonis nefashos to travel on these roads. There are bandits and robbers and all these different types of animals that are lurking on the road. It does not happen. If you go traveling on the road, you go in a caravan. You don't go alone. It's sakonis nefashos to go alone. It's suicidal. Therefore, if you see on the road there are two people traveling together, you have to take yourself back into ancient times. Today, when you read this, it doesn't really sound, what's the big deal? I would prefer to go alone. I don't want someone bothering me. I want to go alone. I want some peace and quiet. Okay, once some people, I went to LA not that long ago, so I was actually looking forward to going because I'll be on a plane to LA, 5 hours on a plane, quiet, all alone. Phone is not going to work up there, even though they have Wi-Fi. I couldn't get it to work, but all alone, some peace and quiet. I can read, I can sleep, right? And what happens? The second I sit down in the seat, there's a couple. A couple sitting next to me in the seat, and I thought, oh, they would see a yeshiva guy, and they would say, oh, they would stay a mile away from me. The husband did not stop talking, and it went on, even during takeoff, the second I sat down in the seat, he just did not stop talking and telling me about his life and showing me pictures. And after about an hour and 15 minutes, I said to him very politely, so interesting, this is really fantastic.
Was that you?
But I said to him, I'm very, very tired. I need to take a rest. So I made believe I was tired. I closed my eyes for about 10 minutes. And then he already occupied himself in some other activities, so he left me alone for pretty much the rest of the flight. So, you think you can make plans? Boy, Hashem has plans for you. Hashem has plans for you. It was very, very interesting.
That travel with the blinders, so you put them on.
It was very, 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 very interesting lesson for me is that don't think you can make your own plans, peace and quiet. The wife said to me, at the end, she said to me,
his wife.
She was also talking to me a little bit. She said to me, you're a good listener.
Captive listener.
I guess I gave her a break. I gave her a break. Okay, it's very, very interesting.
Why
did they were traveling? To me, it was very obvious that this couple are phenomenally wealthy, multi-millionaires. After listening,
you were in first class?
No. I got an upgrade to economy plus. So they. I'm surprised they were not in first class. No, for a business class, they were not. I'm surprised from what he was showing me. He was showing me things, what he does. I mean, it's just not to be believed. I don't know what it appears. And I think to myself, boy, it's a chaval. I should have been a lubavitcher shliach. I could have over here used this opportunity, you know, to do some good fundraising.
Was he Jewish?
Yes, yes, yes. That's really why he was here. That's really why he took an interest in me, because he, after this whole conversation, it came out that he came from an Orthodox family. He was in his 60s. He grew up in L.A., and he came. His grandparents were obviously Shomer Shabbos. His parents were not really. Doesn't seem they were from the conversation. They were 100% observant, but they were pretty traditional. And he seemed to have given everything up. He abandoned everything, and he has a guilt. It's very, very obvious. He has a lot of guilt, and he sees a guy like me with a yarmulke. It reminds him of his grandparents. Reminds him of his parents to a certain degree, and you know he was trying to connect, trying to discover himself.
That's a good check for our colo.
That's what I told you. I told you if I had the skills in doing fundraising. But I did do, I'll tell you what I did do. I'll tell you what I did do. Okay, all my secrets. I had with me a very good book. I took with me the new book of Rabbi Eisenman. Rabbi Eisenman, he's a very choshev rav in a Passaic. So very, he writes a column in the Mishpacha magazine every other week. Every other week he writes a column, and it's very good. It's really powerful. Some of it. He's a very choshev rav. He's a very sensitive person. He's a very interesting background. He really grew up in Eretz Yisrael. He went to YU.
Yeah.
He grew up in Eretz Yisrael. I think from a different type of family, and he became. He has a very interesting story himself, and he's very, very well respected rav in Passaic. And he has a very good heart, very sensitive. So Art Scroll took his articles from the last number of years in Mishpacha magazine and collected them. And obviously he worked with them, and they published a book of all of his articles. So I was debating, what should I take with me on the plane? And I took that, and I was able, Baruch Hashem, to go through the whole book very quickly. And it was very bizarre. It was super bizarre. As I was reading the book, after the sky was quiet, every story touched upon something that this fellow told me. It was like really, really super bizarre. So I said to myself, Hashem over here is doing something over here.
Well, that's the one Tales Out of Shul.
Yeah, it's brand new. It's right off the press. So at the end of the trip, and I also have a tendency to underline things, and when I write, underline and check off. So Baruch Hashem, like another 3-4 hours, it's not just a big book, and I was able to go through the whole book. I said, you know what, I'm going to give it to him. And I wrote in the inscription, I wrote, to my friend in the sky. And I said, if you're ever in Brooklyn, if you ever come to visit Brooklyn, please, perhaps we can get together. And I wrote down my name and my number, and I gave it to them. And they really liked it. They really were like, I saw they were taken, and maybe something will come from that. Maybe it will, you know, there are some very powerful stories. I think Rabbi Eisenman speaks to that. Rabbi Eisenman is a very powerful person. He's very successful with Balei Teshuva. Very, very successful. His shul, his kehila, there are many, many Balei Teshuva. And I really felt it must be Hashem put me here for a reason, to listen to him for an hour and a half. I should take with me this book. And Rabbi Eisenman speaks, Rabbi Eisenman speaks their language. Eisenman is out of the box. He's not your typical hardliner Haredi. Okay? He's not the one that would do that video for 7 years. He's like the complete opposite. I'm certain he's going to write about this for sure, for sure, for sure. If not already, he did already, for sure. It's so up his style. And I really felt, you know, Rabbi Eisenman speaks to these people. And the proof is in the pudding, you know, in the book. And I gave them the book. And like, I tried to be very polite on my best behavior, you know, not to make a chil Hashem, because, you know, one of the things is from L.A., he doesn't really, it's very clear, he doesn't really know very much. And, you know, it's interesting, Hashem, he calls the shots. Hashem, you know, he puts you where you're supposed to be. He upgrades you for a certain reason, to be next to this person, to take this book. Every once in a while, you're zoichet to see the what will come out of this. I don't know. I have no idea. At least I have something to tell you today. At least that.
Did he ever call you?
No, not yet. Not yet. Not yet.
It's only 2 weeks.
I'm not yet. It's just interesting. I really felt it was a hashgacha. Like it says over here, everything that happens in this world by hashgacha, probably sometimes we merit to see it, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it takes years, it takes decades, it takes, in hindsight, centuries, not in our lifetime. But our descendants, future generations can look back. Future generations can look back and say, ah, now we understand. We see the Yad Hashem. Those people who lived in that time, they were not zoichet to see it, but we see it. And it's very, very true in regard to so many things. So many things we see. We even talk about it in Halacha. There are many different disputes from Gedolei Yisrael, different Hashkafa. Who is correct? It's not a nice question to say. Who's correct? There are big fights in Halacha, in Hashkafa. Who is correct? You can't say who is correct. But in history, it's very clear those who took this approach, we see they're successful. We see in time they've accomplished very great things that cannot be dismissed. And those who took a different hashgacha, even though it was from a very great, great Gadol Yisrael, they're very, very great. But the halacha was not in Shemayim accepted like that opinion. Because we see that the world took a turn to go down this path. There are many big dilemmas in Hashkafa.
Sometimes both can be successful.
That's right, of course. And it doesn't mean that one is wrong. It just means in Halacha there's a principle, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chai. However, you have to take one position. If you're in the Beis HaKnesses, this one shul, are you going to daven Nusach Ashkenaz or are you going to daven Nusach Sfard? Eilu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. They're both, or even nusach. That's another nusach. Eilu ve'elu. Everything is authentic, is pure, is perfect. But we have to daven. We only can follow one halacha here in this mokoyim, in this place. You have situations where it's not just a local shul of 10 people. It's the global stage. Hashkafa. How do we deal with this matter of hashkafa that affects every single member of Klal Yisrael? And there's machloikis of the Gedolei Yisrael, and they have different opinions. So who is right? Who's to say everyone is right? Everyone is correct. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But the tzibur can only, in practice, follow one opinion. And at the time, who's to say? But history shows which one was, it's only in hindsight, which one was the accepted halacha. Elu v'elu is divrei Elokim chayim, but halacha can only be one. And in history, in hindsight, we understand now which one was accepted, because this is what the Olam did, and the Olam had success. So who are we to say? It's obviously a lot more complicated than that, but you all understand this, you all obviously understand this. Yeah.
A few days ago, you mentioned about this, and you said in Eretz Yisrael, you can put the dots together very quickly, but things will come.
In Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban says this, the Midah connected to Midah in Eretz Yisrael is accelerated. And therefore, the advantage of being accelerated, it's much easier for the average person to connect the dots. And when it does connect the dots, what happens when you connect the dots? You become a different person. You see the Yad Hashem. When a person sees the Yad Hashem, it affects him. If the amount of time it takes for the Midah connected Midah to play out is over a very long period of time, it's very possible you're going to miss the boat. You're not going to connect the dots. The advantage of living in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Ramban, even today, is it's a land, Eine Hashem Elokecha Doresh Oysa, meaning Midah Keneged Midah is accelerated. What would take in America 10 years to play out will take in Eretz Yisrael 1 year to play out. In America, when finally the cycle is complete after 10 years, I don't even remember what happened yesterday. You're going to challenge me to remember what happened 10 years ago to see the entire cycle? I'm blind. I'm blind to the Yad Hashem. So therefore, I continue in my merry way. I don't change my behavior. I don't advance in Yirat Shamayim. But when you live in Eretz Yisrael, and it only takes a year for that same cycle to conclude, you know, it was only a year ago. this happened, that happened, that happened, that happened. Oh, wow, look at that. I see the Yad Hashem. That changes you. That makes an effect on you. But there's a consequence for that. You got to behave yourself. There's more expected of you. And if you misbehave, the consequence are that much greater. You got to know where you stand, where you're holding, if you're even worthy to live in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah.
I spoke to my son a few days ago, and I mentioned about this, and he felt it very true.
It's very true. Everyone says it's true. This is something which everyone says is very. It's people who live in Eretz Yisrael, who visit, who spend time in Eretz Yisrael. You hear this a lot. They come and they quote the Ramban and they say, it's on the mark. On the mark is something you can really sense. Yeah.
You have a lot of times, machlaik is in Hashkafa or something like that. First it's like one, but later on, as things go on,
Eilu
like
Eilu.
This time. I'll say that right now we hold like Beis Hillel.
When Mashiach comes, we're going to accept Beis Shammai. Exactly. Elul, look, Tefillin of Rashi. We learned about the Tefillin. Today, what do we wear today? Today, we wear Tefillin of Rashi. La Halacha, you're not allowed to make a bracha on Tefillin de Rabbeinu Tam. It's unacceptable. I don't think there's any opinion, any accepted opinion in the world where you can make a bracha, Asher Kiddushanu b'mitzvaysa v'tzivanu lehoniach Tefillin, on Tefillin de Rabbeinu Tam.
Usually some people do both.
They do both at the same time, or they're not mafsik, they put on Rashi, they don't talk, and the whole davening's over, they put on Rabbeinu Tam, even sometimes that's what you put on during Chazar Zashatz, because the bracha of Lohaniach should also go to Rabbeinu Tam, but if you only have it in front of you, Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, it is unacceptable, as far as I know, according to all opinions, just to make a bracha on Rabbeinu Tam. It appears to be clear as day, pretty clear in this farm that delve into the history of Tefillin, that before the Tekufa of Rashi himself, the accepted practice by the Hamoinam was to wear tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, and to make the bracha on the tefillin. What we call Rabbeinu Tam, obviously before Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam existed, there were the two different types of tefillin existed as well. Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, they're the ones just put in words, because they put in words the whole. But the Ravid also, there are really four different types of tefillin. But because Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam put into words the explanation of why the tefillin are made this way, so it's called tefillin of Rashi and the tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. But these two different types of tefillin existed seemingly even back from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Goes all the way back to Har Sinai. What was the mainstream opinion? Rabbeinu Tam. This is what's written up in many, many Sfarim. That is what the most people wore. It's even possible that Rashi himself wore Rabbeinu Tam until maybe later in his life. And then, for whatever reason, it's not. We don't know why. There was a change. There was a change in attitude, a change in thinking, a change in Hashkafa. It's not really clear why. Is that the Chachamim decided, no, it's better, we should issue the Psak Halacha Mikanu Lahaba. The Ikur Tefillin should be Rashi, not Rabbeinu Tam. So exactly, see La Halacha. You see La Halacha, a major change happened in Halacha. Now today we can't do that anymore, obviously. Today we don't live in times when we have Chachamim that have the power to tell us, until now we follow the Mechaber. Now we're going to follow the Ramah, or vice versa. That's over. Okay, until Mashiach comes, finished. But you're going back 1,000 years, you had Gedolei Yisrael, the Rishonim, and maybe a little bit before that, you have the Rabbanim Savaroi, you have certain people of a very high caliber, they had power, and in the Hanami, the Halacha changed. Until now we follow this approach, and now we follow this. Even today there are certain things that you see evolve for reasons beyond our understanding. I told you we were listening to things like when you make a siyum. When I was a child, in Yeshiva Katana, when someone made a siyum of Masechta, it was a davar poshut. Whoever made the siyum recited the Kaddish Derabanan. The Kaddish, the long Kaddish, which mentions Tchiyas HaNesim, which is the same Kaddish that one recites at a cemetery, Rachmanel Tzlan, of the loss of a relative. There was no even Hava Mina that, oh, you have parents, so you should not say this Kaddish when you make a seal. Today, it's a new world. All of a sudden, no, if you have parents, you don't say this Kaddish. Why not? Who changed the rules? Who changed the rules? Somehow, it's not cited anywhere. It doesn't say this anywhere in any sefer what to do or not to do. It became a new minhag. And they asked, someone told me, they asked Chaim Kanievsky, and he says, no, let's talk it right. That's how they should do it. That's how they should do it. The children should not say this Kaddish. All right. But that's not the way it was. Go ask any. You remember it being otherwise different? It wasn't like that.
Still so today, I think most people still do that.
Even if they have parents.
Even if they have
parents. Okay, maybe. Okay. But I've seen already a few times where no. So how do you explain? I don't know. It's somehow halacha has a life of its own. It has a life of its own where, until now, we did things this way. And now we do things this way. And you can't prove me right or wrong because it doesn't say anywhere. It becomes a minhag. What makes something into a minhag? I don't know. It really has a life of its own. There's a special hashkocha process. Hayelchu shnayim yachdav bilti im no'odu. Do two people travel together unless they have met in advance and decided to do something? Nothing happens by accident in this pasuk. And again, like we started with, you have to put yourself back in ancient times when you wouldn't dare travel alone. No such thing, traveling alone on the road. It's suicide to travel alone. If you see two people walking on the road from city to city, it's not a coincidence. They've met and they've decided we're going to travel together. Ish esreihu yoimar chazak, each man will strengthen the other, and we will be spared from the bandits, from the shadim, all of the dangers that lurk on the road. Next pasuk dalim the mitzudos David. What about a lion? Another example of something which to us is clearly not a coincidence. We're giving over here all the examples leading up to the ultimate. All the whole series of examples of things that are not coincidences, things that are clearly done by design, intelligent design of human beings, without a shadow of a doubt. So what's number two? Number two is Dalit, this is nature. Hayishag v'chi yishag arye bayar v'lo yimso teref ki b'shmoya hachayos kol shagoso yamdu b'mukaymam. If a lion gives forth a roar, then all of the other creatures, they are afraid. They stand still. The Mitsudos is giving us a very, very difficult translation of these words. This is not the translation you'd expect. When a lion gives out a roar, according to the Mitsudos, it paralyzes the other creatures, which allows the lion to attack. Is that what you learn? Is that how you learn shot? We have the other farsh, Chazal say another concept is that a lion only gives out a roar through when it's satisfied. If a lion is hungry and there is no food, it will not shout. The word, the yishag, the mitzias of roaring, of the roaring of a lion is only when it sees in front of it food. If it does not see in front of it food, it does not roar. It cries, it whimpers. So that's not what the Mitzvah David says. He says, I told you what Chazal say what I just told you. Ein ari toiref ela mikupa shel basar. A lion only gives forth a loud sound only when it sees in front of it a box of delicious meat. It sees food. If there's no food, quiet. Human beings are not like that. Human beings can fake you out. There can be nothing to eat, and they can say, oh, everything is wonderful and good and delicious, and they can put on a smile. They can fake you out. But a lion is not a faker. A lion will only give forth its sh'oga, only mitoich kupa shel bosa. But again, that's not what it says here in the Mitzvot Tavit. He learns.
It seems to be the contradictory. In the beginning it says he used the sh'oga.
Oh, that's the end. That's the end of the pasuk. Okay, that's the last pasuk. Aryeh sha'og milo yira. The pasuk ches. We have to discuss why over here do we mention the Aryeh twice? What you just said really is what it says at the end of the pasuk. A pasuk has Aryeh shagmi lo yo. When an Aryeh gives forth a roar, it causes the creatures in its vicinity to be afraid. So why is the Aryeh giving forth a roar? Here it says Hayishag Aryeh bayar. It adds in the element that he's in the forest. The teref eloy. Will he? He's learning pshat in the pasuk. Will it not succeed now at this moment in acquiring food? It's a technique. Look at the words of the mitzvahs carefully. V'chiyishag aryeh biyar v'lo yimtza. That's the future tense. Will it not succeed in finding teref? What do you mean? Just because the aryeh gives forth a loud sound, it automatically means it's going to succeed in having a good lunch? The answer is yes. Because what is how did Hashem create this world? Ki b'shmoya hachayois kol shagosai. When the creatures of this world hear the roar of the lion, yamdu b'mekoimam, they are paralyzed, they freeze. Mipachdoi, due to the terror that is instilled within them. And the lion uses that as a method, an offensive method, to now eat them up. The Yavai Bohem, he then attacks them, he comes upon them, Litroif Teref Kiritsoinai. So it's a guarantee when the lion gives forth a roar, it will consume its victim.
Wasn't there a time when the lion was considered the king of the jungle?
It still is.
I don't know if it's that way. There are animals that are not afraid of the lion, obviously.
I don't know.
Why is that obvious?
Why is that obvious?
Who's not afraid of the lion? What animal?
Rabbi, I saw nature films.
Yes.
So the lion, the whole group of lions is composed of male lions, which is one dominant lion, and female lions. The female lions are hunting.
Okay.
The male lion patrols the territory.
He's the patrol. He's the
so he goes around. When he roars. For that reason,
Fascinating, 10 miles.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he protects the territory and he marks the territory. Now, the female lions, they sleep and they wake up, they're hungry, and they start roaring. They organize themselves because they hunt in a group.
They're the hunters. Wow.
So that fits in.
And who? And they bring food to the male lion?
They kill, and the male lion comes, and he sometimes pushes him away and first eats it.
A real man.
So it would fit this provide twice.
Fascinating.
In this first pass,
yes.
They roar because they want to see food. That's the female lion.
Okay. And the second pasuk is the male lion. So he's saying something fascinating. He's saying over here that this Aryeh is the female.
Yes.
The female, when they give forth their sound, it's to hunt.
To hunt, they organize themselves.
And the male lion, when he gives forth his sound, it's not, it's just to instill fear in the community.
Yes.
But it's not to hunt. He patrols, it's my territory.
Yes.
Very, very good. Fascinating. Fascinating parish of this pasuk. Okay, keep looking.
I think you have male and female lion in Birchas Yaakov. Am I right?
You do? There are two Shvatim. Right, you're saying right. This is one of my favorite verloch. It's one of the first things that we learned over here when we started the shiur almost 7 years ago. Is why is it on the top of the Ur HaKodesh there are two lions? Not anymore. Okay, ever for some reason it became not stylish. It's no longer stylish to have on the Ur HaKodesh lions, but it used to be. Behind. They're still here, the lions. They're still on the top. No, I don't see them.
The
luchos, there are lions there.
I don't see
the
lions.
What's
the right of it?
I don't think they're lions. Okay, but it used to be b'li yoytze min haklal, mamish. You're not called a shul unless you have two lions, yeah?
Yes, we have
that. Something else was, it's called here, I see a Hasidic cemetery also, but in the Hebrew, in the cemetery, if it's a Talmud Chochem, a rabbi or a guy, on the Mitzvah, and put a line of books, and a lion with a leg pushes, and the books start falling.
Interesting. How many lions?
One lion.
One lion, and there are books,
yeah,
and the lion is pushing the books.
Like the head, his hand on the book, and
yeah.
They show like the very first, not like a half of it, the very first was already bent.
Interesting. Okay.
And my father will ask to do it.
I never saw this. We have to Google this. I never saw this. Okay. Very interesting. Now, it used to be in every shul, without any exception, okay, on the top of the Aron, there are lions. And still in the Gemara, still I think, right, in the beginning of the Gemara.
The Library also has two lions.
Two lions. It was probably used to be a shul before that. Okay, on the top, it's still in the Sharblat. It's still there on the Sharblat, every single, and still even the Oiz V'Chodah, I don't know, maybe they took it out. They have lions on the first page of every Masechta, the Sharblat. There are lions. Why are there two lions? So no one really knows. So I remember I made a suggestion. In the Birchos Yaakov and in the Birchos Moshe compares one shevet to a lion, and Yaakov compares one shevet to a lion. To whom does Yaakov compare to a lion? To who does Yaakov compare? Yehuda. Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Yehuda is a lion. Who does Moshe compare to a lion?
Don
Gur Aryeh. What's going on? Who's the lion? Is Yehuda the lion or is Don the lion? Which one is the lion? Okay, what did Chazal tell us about Yehuda and about Don? Who was the one who built the Mishkan? Two people. There was Bezalel, Ben Achisamach, Lemate, Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hur, Lemate, Yehuda. And then we have Achisamach, Oholiyah, Ben Achisamach, Lemate, Don. These were the two partners, the two master craftsmen who were entrusted to build the Mishkan. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu select B'davka, B'tzalel, and Oholiyah? So Rashi on the Pasuk says, because Yehuda was from the most distinguished of the Shvatim. Yehuda is Malchus. Don is the Pochus Shebishvatim. Shevet Don was the Ma'asef L'chol HaMachmes. They walked in the back. They were viewed to be the lowest level. Okay, they say today that we're all really in the category, in the Ikvus of the Mashiach, all of the Jews are in the category of Shevet Don. Just like the earlier generations in the timeline of history with the Chashuvim, with Shevet Yehuda, and in the timeline of history, today we are in the category of Shevet Don. We are the Ma'aseif L'chol HaMachnes. We're the closers, the Rivieras. We're going to close up. We're the closers. We're going to close off the times of Golos and bring Mashiach. Rashi says that the reason why both Bezalel and Oholiyah were entrusted to build the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, is because no one should say, okay, everybody say, no one should say that I have no chelek in this makom. Come to the Mishkan, it's not for me. It's members only. It was built by the Nasi, by Shevet Yehuda. Shevet Yehuda. Only for the elite of Klal Yisrael, only they have an opportunity to come to the Beis HaMikdash, to be korbanos, to come close to Hashem. It was only built by Shevet Don, so the elite, it's not lefi kavodai, it's not befitting such great people like us, we should go to this building, to this structure that was built by the pochos shebishvatim, by the lowliest members of Klal Yisrael. In order that no one should make that mistake, Hashem said it's going to be built by a person who's from the greatest tribe and from a person who is from the lowest tribe in order to sandwich the entire Klal Yisrael together. Bezalel from Shevet Yehuda and Oholiyah from Shevet Dan. This is Rashi according to Chazal. So it's very simple. You come into the Beis HaKnesses. What stands front and center in you when you walk into the Beis HaKnesses? Two lions. Lion number one is Yehuda is Gur Aryeh. Moshe Rabbeinu, Don Gur Aryeh. Yaakov compared Yehuda to a lion, and Moshe compared Don to a lion. Every Beis HaKnesses is a Mikdash Me'at. It's a miniature Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is a miniature of what the Mishkan was, the Hashra'as Hashem of the Mishkan. When you walk into the Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaKnesses is for everyone. From the greatest of the great to the lowest of the low. If you're part of the Shiftei Kah, you're part of Klal Yisrael, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference where you stand in Klal Yisrael. You have a chelek in the Torah. You have a chelek in the Beis HaKnesses. Two lions. Okay, I don't know if you listen to the news. There's a lot of interesting debate. The Haredim have a very hard time saying about Pittsburgh, even those that are very sympathetic, they're very sympathetic and very, very noble. It's very interesting in how they refer to, how the language they used to refer to the tragedy. So, they were killed because they were Jews. And they were killed in a place of worship. Now, what do you call that place of worship? So, to me, you know, I don't know the difference. You can say a shul. I mean, I'm not such a sophisticated person to split hairs. But for some people who take this very seriously, they have a hard time saying the word they were killed in a synagogue or in a shul, because even though they are on the right page, their heart is in the right place, and it's an enormous tragedy, and what Hashem is saying to us, who knows? It's very frightening. But can you call, is that Mokim called the Beis HaKnesses? Or would we call him Shulchan Aruch as an Orthodox Jew Beis HaKnesses? I don't know. Who am I to say? So it's very interesting. I did read that there was people who were very sympathetic, but they were very precise in their language. They did not want to use the word synagogue. All right, listen, then someone criticized them. I noticed that Rabbi Bender, he said synagogue. The statement of the OU said synagogue. They're not such medaktikim in the feinschmecks in splitting hairs. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant, not the occasion, it's irrelevant. But look at this. A Beis HaKnesses traditionally has two lions. What are the two lions? From the greatest of the Shvatim to the Pachos Sheba Shvatim. The greatest, you want to be a Haredi and claim that you're medaktik and kol ha'Torah kula? Okay, so you want to say you're from Shevet Yehuda? Wonderful. But you know, there's another line in the Beis HaKnesses. That's for Don. Don was the Ma'aseif L'chol HaMachanos. They were on the outside the Anani HaKavod. They weren't yet with the program. Okay, there was room for improvement. But there's a lion! There's a lion for them also! Everyone has a chelik in serving Hashem. Unfortunately, they were not brought up understanding what Yadus is truly about. Rachmana Litzlan, okay, Rachmana Litzlan. And these people probably, they come from the greatest yichus. You'd be shocked when you go and you start analyzing where they come from. They come from the goyim or shebe goyim, who they come from. It's a big Rachmanis, and it's a taina on us why we have not succeeded in drawing them closer to us, even by doing nothing, but just by example, just that we should not be on the front cover of the New York Times of scandals of all of these things. You don't have to go out to Pittsburgh to Makarov them. If the New York Times says nice things about Orthodox Jews, you know the ramifications, you know how it spreads, you know how the people begin to think, you know what? Maybe I should also be a Shemesh Shabbos. But if they read the New York Times, this Orthodox Jew did this Avera, this did this Avera, and this Avera. So what do you think when people in Pittsburgh, when they see Orthodox Jews, what do you think? See, Baruch Hashem, we're not Orthodox Jews. We're liberals. It's a taina on us, not a taina on them. Instead of putting the focus in all of these things. But in the Beis HaKnesses, there are two lions. So you're suggesting another whole idea. I love what you're saying. The other two lions you're suggesting is this lion over here in the beginning of the pasuk. The first is Aryeh Hayishag Aryeh Bayar V'Teref Eloi. And then in pasuk Ches, there's another lion. Aryeh Shog Milo Yira. These are the two lines in the Beis HaKnesses. And as you're suggesting, based upon scientific knowledge, there's the male lion and there's the female lion. Doesn't appear that we have a different word to separate the gender, male and female. It seems that the same word is being used in adult. Ari represents the adult. The adult of the adult. There are seven different levels in their development. But in the seven levels of development, I do not believe we differentiate between male and female. So here it says Arye. You're suggesting one is the male, one is the female, and we know that their role is very different. The role of the female is to hunt. The role of the male is to serve as the protector, to serve as the source of strength, defense for the community. We have two different lions. When you come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in essence, either you can say it refers to Klal Yisrael, or you can say maybe it refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We do know that the Beis HaMikdash is called the lion. The Beis HaMikdash is called the Ariel. Okay, some people have that name, Ariel. Ariel comes from the word lion, Ari. Ari is another term for lion, Ariel. The Ribbono Shel Olam is a lion. This is all the question, is Hashem male or is Hashem female? Okay, that's not a nice thing, not a nice question, but you always hear about this. Is Ribbono Shel Olam, so the answer is none of the above. What kind of crazy thing is that? Hashem is everything. But if you want to say that the Beis HaMikdash is called the Ariel, and there are two lions, and there's the role of the male lion, the role of the female lion, and the role of the male lion over here in this passage he's saying is to provide, right? To hunt, which means to sustain.
Female.
The female is to sustain. The role of the male is to be the protector. He is Shomer Yisrael, Shemar She'eris Yisrael, V'al Yoyvad Yisrael Ha'imim Shema Yisrael is the protector. It's very interesting what you're saying is that the two lions are put on top of the Aron HaKodesh. The Aron HaKodesh, the Shechina hovered over the Aron HaKodesh. This was the primary. And the Beis HaMikdash is called the Shechina, appeared on the Mizbeach in the Tzura of a lion. And a lion is broken up into the male and the female, as we see here in this Pasuk. And each one has its role. The Ribbono Shel Olam is multifaceted. He's our provider, he's our sustainer, and he is our protector. So obviously there's something to it. Why has the lion fallen has disappeared? So they say it's a religious reason because it's an avodah zarah. I don't understand all this. It's been good for centuries. Why all of a sudden we become more religious today and we feel the avodah zarah is begeder lesasil chapesel? It's begeder a molten image. It's no such thing. It's pesel is only something in shemayim, not something on this world. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it's definitely taken a hit. The lion has taken a hit, and it's interesting. It's not, tradition. It was tradition to have a lion all of these years. Even the Magen David. The Magen David until recent times, every shul had a Magen David on it. Who didn't have a Magen David on it?
And a Mazalais also. Every shul used to have the
Mazalais. There wasn't a shul that didn't have the Magen David. So what happened in Magen David? Does the Magen David have Kedusha? Big mystery. No one really knows. Big mystery. Well, we gave it Kedusha. The whole principle is, even if it doesn't have Kedusha, the fact that it represents... It was used by Klal Yisrael for so many years. The earliest history of the Magen David was in a cemetery. The earliest history was that there was a cemetery of non-Jews, and they had crosses, Shasi Ve'erif. And they buried, and the government forced the Jews to be buried in the same cemetery. So in order to distinguish between a Jewish grave and a non-Jewish grave, so all of the non-Jewish graves had a Shasi Ve'erif, so about 1,000 years ago, even more maybe, they put on the gravestone a different symbol, the symbol of what we call the Magen David. And from that, it became a symbol for us. Is it really something that's Kabbalistically has significance? Some want to say the Rezil HaMalach, when there's a sefer, a very mystical sefer that goes back, who knows how long, in Rezil HaMalach, he talks about this symbol. Do we really understand what he's talking about, or are we just rewriting the book? No one really knows. So this is something which you're not going to get an answer to. There's no resolution if the Mogen David really has holy significance. One thing is for sure, we have given it significance. We have given it significance in the fact that it was a universally recognized symbol of Yadlus for almost 1,000 years. And then when the Tzionim came along and they adopted it, there was a backlash. People who did not appreciate the approach of the Tzionim, none of our business, it became a problem for them because it became a symbol of identifying with that movement. So they separated themselves from it. That's what it is. These are the facts. These are the facts. So it is what it is. But for so many years. But it's interesting is that the Magen David you don't see anymore. Imamish don't see the Magen David anymore. Even though only 50 years ago. Every picture you'll ever see of someone talking to even the biggest Gedolei Yisrael, the biggest Gedolei Yisrael, when you see them speaking in the Beis HaKnesses or any event against an Aron HaKodesh, you will see right alongside the biggest Gedolei Yisrael, the Magen David. Posh, open up any art scroll book, any art scroll history book, and go, you'll see them, the Gedolei Yisrael talking, whoever it is, by Aron HaKodesh, you're going to see the Magen David. Every shul, b'li yoytzim in haklal. B'li yoytzim in haklal. But today, they're not doing it anymore. Today, no one's doing it. The crazy people will calm down. And that's talking true. A lot of crazy people. All right, he told me a very interesting story. I can't tell you this. Mary Appeldorf. We're getting way too sidetracked these days. We have to really get back and learn. But Meir Appeldorf, he told me a very interesting story. He told me, I don't remember the name of the person. One of the big Gedolei Yisrael. He was at a wedding in Eretz Yisrael, and he wore his uniform. The chassam wasn't from the Gedolei Yisrael. He was a Talmud Chacham, a Tzioini, a Shtikl Tzioini. And he wore, by his wedding, his uniform. By the Goyim, it's a source of pride. It's a source of pride if you're a soldier. If you're a decorated soldier and you're an officer in the army in America or in any country, when you get married, it's an honor that you wear your military uniform. And you wear, it's a very chashuv thing. Well, the medals. I don't know if they'd still do it today, but there's a chashuv. So this goes back, who knows, probably 70, 80 years. There's actually a picture of this person who we know to be a very big Talmud Chacham, and he was wearing his uniform, his Israeli uniform. Okay, we're state already. I don't know all the details. He was wearing a uniform, and I don't know yet. He knows all the names. He told me all the names, all the details. At the wedding, there were Gedolei Yisrael at this wedding, from the biggest Gedolei Yisrael, and someone commented to one of the Gedolim, he should be wearing a kittel. Why is the chassan wearing his military uniform? The chassan should be wearing his kittel. So the gadol said that why do you wear a kittel? You wear a kittel because it's big day malchus. I don't know the exact words. There are many reasons. Mask of the hamisa. That's one reason. Mask of the hamisa. But another reason why you wear a kittel is yudoyma. It's a garment of chashivas. A kohen gadol wore white. Big day lavan. When he went lefnai v'lefnimi, were big day lavan. It's a garment of holiness, a garment of chashivas. So he said, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and he'll tell you who it was, and he'll be shocked. He said, the military uniform, which represents the fact that this person is part of people who die al kiddush Hashem to protect Acheinu b'nei Yisrael, is even more chashuv than a kittel. You're supposed to wear a big day malchus, big day kavod, big day kohen gadol when you get married. It doesn't say this anywhere in Shulchan Aruch. It's a minug. So the fact that you're wearing a uniform, your military uniform, Chayolei Tzva Haganah Yisrael, it's just as good, if not better, than wearing a kittel. Today, you would never hear someone say something like that. Never, ever, ever. Just goes to show how different we live, and we're brainwashed, and we're afraid to say things like this because we don't want to take the backlash. We don't want to say what we really believe because everything has been stigmatized and hulu v'hulu. Isn't that an amazing insight for someone to say something like that? It's an amazing thing. And again, going back to the Aryeh, I think we came out today with something fascinating. Yashar Koach, thank you very much. You really, really enlightened us. The two lions, the first lion, the second lion, Rabbi Kodesh, and the other idea, tradition. Maybe one day the lions will find their way back into the Beis Medrash. Maybe one day there'll be a...
The lions are not in the jungle either.